to the Pete Space. I'm Simone Howell with Palette Life Sciences. Palette Life Sciences is dedicated to providing educational resources and fostering meaningful peer-to-peer discussions about VUR and pediatric urology. Today, it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Ted Lee, pediatric urologist at Boston Children's Hospital. Dr. Lee received his undergraduate degree from the University of Notre Dame and a medical degree from New York University School of Medicine. He completed his urologic residency training at the University of Michigan and pediatric fellowship at Boston Children's Hospital. Dr. Lee has also completed the Harvard-wide Pediatric Health Services Research Fellowship and obtained a master's degree in computational biology and quantitative genetics from the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Today, we discuss Dr. Lee's research regarding changes in clinical presentation and renal outcomes among children with febrile urinary tract infection. The opinions in this podcast are those of Dr. Lee. Dr. Lee, thank you so much for joining us today on the Pete Space. I want to talk to you about your research that you have been doing for the past few years on the guidelines effect on the kidneys of children with VUR and children that have UTI. Can you give me a little background on what your thinking was around these studies and what your hypothesis was?
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure and it's an honor to be here to talk about a topic that I feel is very important and often forgotten about. And my journey in this field of research started when I was a second year resident, actually. I was seeing a patient with a febrile urinary tract infection, and I evaluated the patient and I staffed the patient with my attending after reading the 2011 AAP guidelines, the American Academy of Pediatric Guidelines on UTI management for patients less than 24 months of age. And I kind of read off the guidelines and said, hey, this is a first time febrile UTI. The patient has renal bladder ultrasound. I don't think we need to get a VCUG. We can just, you know, have this patient followed with a pediatrician, general pediatrician, and that was that. And my attending actually gave me a different recommendation and said, no, I actually believe, I disagree with the guidelines. I think we should get a VCUG for XYZ reasons. And that was really interesting to me. And this was an attending I respected very much, Dr. John Park, and someone that was very thoughtful about how he treated patients and was up to date on the literature. He clearly knew about the guidelines. And, you know, that got me thinking, why is there so much controversy over this decision, this new guidelines on UTIs for patients less than 24 months of age? And, you know, then I got digging and I understood from the literature review that there was a big issue of overdiagnosis and overtreatment of kids presenting with UTI. I mean, UTI is one of the most prevalent diagnoses in children. 7% of children at some point in their lives have urinary tract infection. And that's a very, very high number. It's very prevalent. I think our job as clinicians, like other things, is to identify the kids who are going to have trouble, the kids who aren't just going to have a one-time UTI and move on, the kids who are going to have recurrent infections, the kids who are going to have pyelonephritis, kidney damage, etc. And VUR, vesicoureteral reflux, is obviously a risk factor for pyelonephritis. So, you know, that's why we get the VCUG in the first place. The problem was that, you know, we were overdiagnosing. We were getting VCUGs for everyone, sometimes non-febrile UTI, just straightforward infections. And this was creating the problem of overdiagnosis, because I strongly believe if you took 100 children off the street, literature and studies have shown that a high proportion of them are going to have underlying reflux, which spontaneously resolves. But it was kind of the idea of nobody was risk stratifying these kids. Nobody was thinking about, well, okay, who's susceptible to VUR? What demographics? Who is most susceptible to recurrent infections? Maybe we should get VCUGs on patients who are most susceptible to VUR, are more susceptible to recurrent infections, and eventual renal scarring. But nobody was doing that. It was just one size fits all. You have a UTI, you get a VCUG, we diagnose VUR, and then another part of the problem was that we were over-treating. A lot of urologists historically were treating VUR. A lot of kids, even without infections, they were doing reimplants, open surgeries, and people were being very aggressive about it. To give you an example, you know, you would have a sibling, a patient with UTIs and VUR diagnosis, and then people would start imaging and getting BCUGs for asymptomatic siblings, diagnosing VUR and doing surgeries on them. I think that was when the pendulum was way to the problem of overdiagnosis, overtreatment. So the AAP got a hold of this, identified it as a big problem, which I think it was appropriate, and totally swung the pendulum the other way. The message became, okay, UTIs, don't worry about it. Just get an ultrasound. You don't have to get a VCUG. And this sent the message in 2011 to pediatricians, maybe UTIs are not that big of a problem. The guidelines say you just can get an ultrasound, not a big deal. And it kind of sent the direction the opposite way. And in both cases, I think, from the urologist perspective or nephrologist perspective of, oh gosh, we got to get VCUGs on a lot of kids. And once VUR is diagnosed, we got to treat them aggressively because we want to prevent kidney damage and we got to protect the kidneys. To the perspective of the AAP guidelines, it's kind of like, well, you know, UTIs, the vast majority of kids do fine, no big deal. So that was the platform in which I want to kind of study this problem. What was going on? The first question was, okay, what has been going on since the 2011 AAP guidelines were published? And in 2018, we did a study where we compared the VCUG utilization rates before and after the guidelines were published in 2011. And it showed that people were starting to get less and less VCUGs. And as expected, VUR was getting diagnosed less and less. So that was published in the Journal of Urology 2018. And what we realized in that study is that this wasn't just happening in 0 to 2 years of age, which was what the guidelines were recommending for. This was also happening in kids who are 3 to 10 years of age. I think that was an important finding. Another important thing is that VCUG utilization rates in kids 3 to 10 years of age were downtrending starting in 2001. That trend was getting continued, but in kids less than 24 months of age, the guidelines had a true impact on how practice was being performed, how VCUG was being utilized. It was being utilized less. VR was being diagnosed less. So that was kind of what started all. That was the study I performed between my second and third year of residency. But that begs the question, VCUGs are utilized less, VR is getting diagnosed less, but is it resulting in kids getting delayed diagnoses? That's the question. Kids with VUR, how many days do they go in between their first UTI until their day of VUR diagnosis? The hypothesis being that if you're getting less VCUGs and diagnosing less VUR, you're missing a lot of children with recurrent infections who eventually get diagnosed with VUR, and you're missing a window of opportunity where you could possibly treat them with prophylactic antibiotics, possibly with bowel bladder dysfunction, meaning improved constipation, improved voiding habits. Obviously, there are interventions like endoscopic injection of deflux as well as open surgery for reimplantation that could have been done, but I would say most urologists around the country and around the world are less aggressive about that. You try conservative measures like antibiotics and improvement in voiding habits, constipation first. And what we published in JAMA Pediatrics in 2019 is that the amount of undiagnosed days or the period in between the first emergency room presentation for UTI until the time in which VUR was diagnosed was increasing drastically since 2011. And we thought this was a direct result of the 2011 AAP guidelines. And essentially the message that I got from this is that kids with underlying VUR are being missed and they're getting diagnosed late. In addition to that finding, what we found is that even though we're getting less BCUGs, we're diagnosing the same amount or very similar amount of VUR. So the detection rate of VUR per screening voiding cystic urethrogram or BCUG did not change before and after the guidelines. So what that told me is that we're just getting less BCUGs, but we're not being selective about how we're getting them. We're not targeting the kids who are going to have VUR or are more susceptible to recurrent infections. And that's the problem. And that study was done when I was a fourth and fifth year resident. And I came for fellowship at Boston Children's, and I had a great opportunity to study the end outcome that everyone really cares about, which is renal scarring. Right, the concept is that if you get recurrent infections, that you can get kidney scarring, especially in little kids that are permanent. And that's a whole idea or reasoning behind treating VUR and managing kids with recurrent infections. So we compared cross-sectional cohorts of patients in 2005 and 2015, so before and after the guidelines were published. And among kids 13 years or younger who presented for a history of febrile UTI with initial VCUG, we studied outcomes like recurrent UTI, presence of reflux, rate of reflux, and renal scarring. And what we found was that compared to children in 2005, those presenting in 2015 had three times the odds of presenting with a recurrent UTI, and renal scarring was much more common in children presenting in 2015. The odds ratio was around three. So compared to 2005, children presenting in 2015 for post-UTI BCUG increased in likelihood in terms of recurrence of UTI as well as a renal scarring. But what we found was that the VUR diagnosis rate was the same between 2005 and 2015, which again reiterated our initial findings from the previous study published in JAMA Pediatrics. BCUG was being utilized less, but it was not being utilized more selectively. It was more of like a one-size-fits-all approach to patients with infections. That was published in 2021 in Journal of Urology. And those are kind of the three studies that I publish regarding this, I think, important issue. I would like the pendulum to be in the middle. I don't think the old ways of overdiagnosis and overtreating kids with infections and VUR is correct. I also don't think we shouldn't get BCUGs on anyone. I think with new technologies and new research studies that we can selectively perform BCUGs on the demographic of children more susceptible to recurrence, to VUR, and ultimately renal scarring. So that's my long-winded research findings over the last 5 years.
So Dr. Lee, are you planning on doing more research around this topic down the road?
So there's a lot of research actively being done at Boston Children's regarding risk stratification of patients presenting with UTI. A lot of that work is being in our department, spearheaded by Scott Wong. He is a very knowledgeable and experienced researcher in machine learning, artificial intelligence, which gets a bad rep, but essentially using complex algorithms to identify kids that are going to get a recurrence or that have a high susceptibility or risk factors for VUR. And he is actively leading that study within our department. Obviously, I help out when I can, and I do have some background in complex algorithms or statistical learning and machine learning, but he's spearheading it, and I believe a lot of other groups around the country are trying to achieve the same thing as this problem has surfaced. I'm excited to see how those algorithms will perhaps change practice patterns and outcomes in the future.
These research findings, have they changed the way you communicate to your referral base, to pediatricians in the area, or how you actually approach diagnosing a VUR?
I think that UTI management is nuanced, right? I mean, it's a subtle thing. Like boys with redundant foreskin have a very high risk of infection. especially at a young age. Girls who don't have foreskins at a young age, their infection risk is low. The UTI risk changes with age. Family history matters. Family history of your VUR infection matters. I mean, that's the message and that's the teaching that we need to send out and disseminate amongst the general pediatric community. And we need more platforms to do that because general pediatricians, they're busy. They don't have much time for well child visits, which essentially I would say a kid with a UTI or two, what could be considered a well child, right? From a pediatrician's perspective. But it's more complicated than that. And the guidelines have to reflect that. I think to their credit, the AAP has seen the body of work that's been done since the 2011 AAP guidelines have been published. They're aware of the risks of really ignoring UTIs. And there's been some push, I think, by the AAP to have more urology involvement in their guideline formation. And actually, the senior author in our last paper in 2021, Caleb Nelson, who is a senior faculty member within the Boston Children's Department of Urology, he's going to be on the guideline committee for the new version of the UTI guidelines from the AAP. So I'm very hopeful that the new guidelines will include some more kind of risk stratification and send messages that it's not a one-size-fits-all picture here. So I'm hopeful, I'm cautiously optimistic that we will see changes.
Dr. Lee, I appreciate you being on, and I thank you very much for your insights and the research you've done on behalf of children. And we are going to look forward to more topic discussions around this issue and more great things to come out of Boston.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Pete Space. Remember to subscribe to the Pete Space on Apple, Google, or Spotify to be notified of new episodes. To access more educational content, visit the Deflux Learning Center on deflux.com or follow us at LinkedIn and Twitter. You may learn more about our company and our products at palatelifesciences.com.